This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Just a few minutes ago, President Bush finished a speech to the graduating class at the U.S. Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs, the second in a series of speeches that focuses on terrorism, Iraq, and the Middle East. The address comes a day after U.N. envoy Lakhdar Brahimi announced the makeup of the new interim government in Baghdad. Brahimi today urged Iraqis to accept the new government, stop fighting, and work toward elections. And a day after the U.S. and Britain submitted a revised proposal on Iraq to the U.N. Security Council. Those political and diplomatic developments come amid continued violence. Another car bomb in Baghdad, the seizure of at least two more hostages, an Egyptian and a Turk, and fighting between American troops and militiamen loyal to Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr. Also today, the Pentagon announced an expansion of the stop-loss policy, which bars retirements or transfers out of units in or headed to Iraq. In a moment, we'll hear excerpts from the president's remarks and analysis. A bit later, we'll also talk about what Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry has been doing and saying on the campaign trail, especially about national security and Iraq. If you have questions about Iraq's place in the campaign right now, about the problems and opportunities that both campaigns face, our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. In his speech to the graduating class at Colorado Springs, the U.S. Air Force Academy, the President of the United States, George W. Bush, spoke about the war on terrorism, tried again to put it in the context of the struggles against totalitarian regimes in the 20th century, and spoke about the resurgence of terrorist violence around the world from Spain to Indonesia since September the 11th, but he said all of it centers on one region in particular.
Events in the Middle East will set the course of our current struggle. If that region is abandoned to dictators and terrorists, it will be a constant source of violence and alarm, exporting killers of increasing destructive power to attack America and other free nations. If that region grows in democracy and prosperity and hope, the terrorist movement will lose its sponsors, lose its recruits, and lose the festering grievances that keep terrorists in business.
The United States, the president said, will continue to work for democracy through the region. Iraq, he said, would remain a free, independent, and democratic state. He also said that the United States would hold its friends in the region to a higher standard as other states continue to work for reforms. And the president also articulated his policy in the Middle East and explained how it is different from previous policies.
For decades, free nations tolerated oppression in the Middle East for the sake of stability. In practice, this approach brought little stability and much oppression. So I've changed this policy. In the short term, we will work with every government in the Middle East dedicated to destroying the terrorist networks. In the longer term, we will expect a higher standard of reform and democracy from our friends in the region.
And the president also vowed to continue the struggle against terrorism wherever it is. He said the governments in Afghanistan, Iraq, that fostered terrorism and sheltered terrorists played a terrible price for those policies. We will strike the terrorists before they can strike our people, he said. The best way to protect America is to remain on the offensive. Again, those are the remarks today of President Bush in Colorado Springs. Joining us now to help us analyze these remarks and tell us where this suggests U.S. policy on Iraq is going in the near future is NPR's Washington editor, Ron Elving. He's with us here in 3A. Ron, always good to have you on the program.
Good to be with you, Neil.
And joining us now from California as well is David Sanger, New York Times White House correspondent. David, good to have you back on the program.
Good to be back here.
Ron Elving, the president in the past couple of days, following the announcement by Mr. Brahimi of the new government in Iraq, yesterday's made a couple of speeches on Iraq in 2 days. Last week, of course, last Monday night, he started this series of speeches. Have we been able to determine what's different, what he's trying to articulate now that he's been having so much trouble perhaps communicating to the American people before?
I don't think that there's anything necessarily new about what the president is trying to communicate. But I do think the president has a couple of, if you will, boosts at his disposal right now. One is, of course, the naming of the new government in Iraq, which gives shape and form to what has been more or less a notion for some weeks and months, which is that we're going to hand over power to, quote, the Iraqis, unquote. But we did not know who these Iraqis were going to be, what sort of people they would be, what kind of form it would take. And having this new government, with all of the question marks, with all of the caveats about it not being elected and not necessarily including all the people we would have most liked to have seen, it is a government that would be of Iraqis and something to which we could seriously propose to transfer power. So that's a big help. The president now has that concrete reality to deal with and to put in his speeches and to defend. The other thing that the president is trying to bring to bear here is a national mood, which is perhaps fleeting, but let's grab it while it's there, that's associated with the Memorial Day holiday, with the opening of the World War II Memorial in Washington on the National Mall, and with the 60th anniversary of D-Day. What does D-Day represent? The finest moment, if you will, of the United States sacrificing itself for the liberation of others and the rebuilding of other countries. World War II, its successful conclusion, the defeat of Japan and Germany, and then on top of that, the reconstruction of Japan and Germany, perhaps the finest hour of the United States in terms of its generosity. So all of those, if you will, great successes are associated with America's resolve, unity, national will in the past, and the president, of course, would dearly like to bring all of those characteristics and notions and themes to bear on our current crisis in Iraq.
David Sanger, let me ask you, obviously, for several months in a row, there has been a series of, it's been a painful period for U.S. forces in Iraq and for the president's policy in Iraq. Do these two developments, the naming of the government, the new resolution at the United States, give him this opportunity to reintroduce the democratic idealism that that so much characterized many of his speeches before the war?
Well, it certainly does, and it's probably the best opportunity they'll have in this regard between now and the election. And their hope, of course, and I think everybody's hope, is that this interim government manages to put things together and begin to create a sense of both calm and progress in the country, and that it will be strong enough to stand up to the insurgents, who obviously will view it as their number one target. I think what's interesting about these speeches, though, is that they are actually quite different than the kind of speeches the president was giving before the war. Now, those were obviously much more heavily aimed at the questions of weapons of mass destruction, which gave a sense of urgency to the project and a sense of imminence to the threat, although the White House is careful to say that the president himself never used the word imminent. But he certainly suggested that this was something that could not be tolerated any longer. The speeches since the war was over and since the failure to discover the weapons of mass destruction have gone back really to a theme that the president only delineated once in great length before the war, which was during a speech at the American Enterprise Institute, probably about a month and a half before the war started, which is the democratization project here. And the second thing the president did today was try to put this war in the context of great struggles against totalitarian regimes during World War II. And it's there that I think that many historians and others would probably beg to differ with him.
And there are some, including some in his own party, who would say that events on the ground in Iraq seem to belie the president's high-flown aspirations, that particularly deals with militias, as we've seen in Fallujah, tend to suggest that the United States is cutting whatever deals it can to get whatever security it can, even at the price of allowing people to celebrate what they regard as military victories over American forces.
Well, the White House makes the quite legitimate argument that you have to separate out a long-term goal, which is what the president's discussing in the democratization portion of his speeches, from the tactical difficulties we're having getting there. You know, we forget now that the occupations of Japan and Germany were no party either, and that it was, the Marshall Plan really only came in a year and a half into the occupation, and we haven't even been that long yet in Iraq. On the other hand, I think the big issue that is the president has sort of failed to address is to justify his statement that Iraq is the central front on the war on terrorism. Certainly, Iraq is a problem for the Middle East, was a problem for the Middle East under Saddam. Whether or not it was the same problem or a different problem than the terrorism and Al-Qaeda issue is a subject of some debate. And I think what you've seen the most interesting that John Kerry has done in the campaign so far, and did in an interview with me and one of my colleagues on Friday evening, is that he's begun to say, you know, we really have to look at where our priorities were and whether or not, in fact, while we were pursuing Saddam Hussein, we have let more urgent nuclear and biological threats, but mostly nuclear threats, fester in North Korea and in Iran.
And those are some of the same things his opponents in the Democratic Party have been saying. We'll be hearing more about that a little bit later in the program. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. William joins us now on the line from Washington, D.C.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
You know, listening to you and your guest, and you know, I take no position to be a Republican or Democrat. No one really knows what they would have done in 9/11. You know, I think the country should unify. It's unfortunate that we're embarked on an election year, and one party makes it sound like it's going to do a better job than the other party. That's not the case. You know, the country needs to be defended. We were attacked. I think the president did the very best he could under the circumstances. There was no cookie cutter formula to defending his country. And it just bothers me that someone who aspires to the office will make it sound like he's going to do a better job when he supported the president. He supported his ideas. He supported he voted for it. So, I mean, what's the problem? There's not really a whole lot of difference between his position and to talk about nuclear war, missile heads, and so forth. Those problems have always been there. It's just not a good thing. We need to unify. The country needs to unify. It's just not good. That's my position on it.
William, thanks very much. Ron Elving, William points out that Senator Kerry, and again we'll be talking about some of his positions a little bit later, but that he certainly has some problems differentiating his positions on the conflict in Iraq from those of President Bush.
It's certainly a common view that in a situation where the country is stressed, where we're at war, that any kind of criticism of the president should be muted, should be expressed in terms of within the family, if you will, and that we should not offer any aid and comfort to our enemies by virtue of showing dissent within our country. At the same time, this is an election year. It's not an election year for any reason other than the calendar. We have one every 4 years. One of the opportunities that people have to weigh in with respect to such important matters as their nation being at war is through their election process. And while John Kerry has, as the caller suggests, certainly not taken a 180-degree different approach to Iraq from the president's, has not said we should pull out immediately, we never should have gone. What John Kerry has done is he has expressed something closer to what I think you would find to be a consensus in the polls, at least among people of his own party, that this was not going about in an ideal way, that we should have had more international support, and that there certainly are ways in which the president could have done better.
David Sanger, thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it today.
Thank you.
David Sanger joining us on the phone from California. He's the White House correspondent of the New York Times. Ron Elving is going to stay with us. When we come back from a short break, we'll continue to talk about Iraq national security, the war on terror, and the campaign, this time focusing on John Kerry. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.